The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TrueGreen.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Roto-World Football Show. I am Patrick Daugherty, joined today by Denny Carter, where we will be diving into a training camp news roundup. We will examine the Patriots' backfield, the Commanders' backfield, maybe the Seahawks' backfield, the Michael Thomas situation, the Packers' receiver situation. For some reason, Denny wants to talk about Christian Kirk and so much more. But first, Denny, you know, it's been a topic in the industry this summer about the threads on Twitter and how they will never die. Long live the thread. All of a sudden, everyone's trying to like grind engagement by like threads or whatever. That's kind of been crowding out, I feel like, the thumbnail.
Where
there's become an escalating thumbnail war where amongst like the YouTube influencers in our industry, there's like a very strong belief that if you have like a good thumbnail, like people are going to listen to your show. Like typically your mouth has to be like agape.
Yes.
And like, it doesn't, if your mouth is agape, it doesn't matter. There's a producer like,
we need 60% more agape from there. Colin, if you can just try to see if you can literally unhinge your jaw.
Man, really? Like my jaw actually kind of hurts. I don't know if I can even talk anymore after this. And there's been a thumbnail war. I see that you made a thumbnail.
I did.
And our friend Al Smizzle with your mouth, I would say honestly only 35% agape. We got 65% more agape to go. You're wearing viral type sunglasses and with the caption, did I draft the all caps worst fantasy team all caps ever? Question mark. Take me through your thumbnail process.
Well, I tend to see a lot of thumbnails as my son horrifyingly watches YouTube.
Oh my God. Yeah.
My son is almost 10 years old and he likes his YouTube. Now, you know, we have the parental restrictions on it. Still doesn't quite do the trick, but lots of thumbnails, and it doesn't matter what he's watching, whether it's music related, whether it's Pokemon related, magic tricks, whatever. Everybody has their mouth wide open, and
there's
and
never been a closed mouth in a thumbnail. That's just YouTube doesn't even allow it.
This is actually like scientifically proven to make people click. Like there are like articles out there. Where, like you know, research that's been done, and people for some reason cannot stop themselves from clicking on people with their mouth agape, no matter the topic. It doesn't matter. And the best is when you can get a celebrity on there with mouth open. Now, I want to say, I'm going to make you feel bad here. I have a jaw issue. I've never told you about this, where I can't actually open my mouth very wide because of a botched dental procedure that happened when I was a teenager. Now I'm
serious?
Over it. I'm sorry to make you feel terrible, but yeah, and I can't. Oh, so yeah, no, my mouth, it looks like I'm not opening my mouth very wide on that thumbnail that I sent Al, but that's actually as wide as it goes.
That's why you've been banned from YouTube. Jaws all messed up.
Although I do think that would do numbers. I would say, you know, somewhere in the range of 500,000 to 600,000 clicks on that of someone say, did I draft the worst fantasy team? Because he self-deprecation works as well as you know, lauding yourself for your
You and I delve into the self-deprecation a little bit. It's a bit, totally. I don't actually think these things about myself.
Yeah, we actually love ourselves.
Yeah, we love ourselves. I guess the thumbnail game, when the White House is trying to sell the Inflation Reduction Act, I mean, I got a press release email, Joe Biden's mouth, I mean, literally like being like cranked open, like 110% open. Yeah. To try and to get me to vote for
you
him.
You clicked.
I did click. I clicked. I watched it.
And now you know everything about the various parts of that bill.
I do. I tweeted it. Very few people know that it actually allocated $693 million to the St. Louis Cardinals to increase Albert Pujols' power as he tries to reach 700 home runs down the stretch of the season. And I wouldn't have known that if I hadn't clicked. But
that's right.
Joe Biden opened his mouth as far. As it will go, what a man, your son is. So he's a YouTube. My son, by the way, likes YouTube. My son is obsessed with this YouTube show called The Fixies. And it's about Matt. He's 4 years old. It's about magical screws that are like people and like help this boy named Tom Thomas. Like he's like, and he's like, oh, my computer's broken. And like these screws come out and like fixes. My son has watched every episode, probably quite literally a dozen.
Really?
It's the only show. He's not very interested in screens, but he gets like an hour of Fixies time a day.
Yeah, I don't get it. Look, I told my son the other day, I said, you have every movie and every show ever made by humanity available to you, and yet you watch a grown man talk about Pokemon cards in the most annoying format possible. This guy's opening Pokemon packs and screaming about them. It is the most humiliating thing I've ever seen. Now I know I analyze fantasy football for a living. I understand that. And people are gonna Pokemon Truth is out there gonna say, but you do fantasy football. I get it. Okay. I will say that watching this grown man open his little baby Pokemon packs and start squealing is quite embarrassing. For him, I'm sure, and for me.
I've never done anything as embarrassing. I'm trying to hold off on watching my new Dragon show, but I know I'm going to watch it.
I'm not watching that stuff.
You're not going to watch it? Come on.
No, man.
Come on, man.
Game of Thrones sucked.
No, well, all right. Well, I mean, yeah, sure, the ending sucked, didn't he?
It was going to be, again, I'm going to stick by this one. It would have been a fantastic one season show.
No. It would have 4 or 5 would have been the first 4 entertainment on the grandest scale maybe ever conceived.
Stop. You end it with, and I'm not going to spoil it for people who haven't watched the first season.
Nah, it's the kids, the guy.
14 years ago. But when Ned's head comes off.
Oh my God. Come on.
You stop, man. It. I'm sorry.
Ruined.
But wait, no, I did say spoiler alert.
Oh yeah, I forgot. I didn't know you were actually going to say it. What I'm actually going to say is that we need to talk about football.
Yeah, I guess.
Instead of, as much as I would like to learn the intricacies of the thumbnail game, Denny, as is the case this time of year, it has been a month of shifting backfields, and I have a typo in the document. I wrote a different word than shifting on accident. Perhaps nowhere are the implications as large as New England, where it appears that not only is Ramondre Stevenson making a play for third down duties, which would be a total game changer in fantasy football, he could even be passing Damian Harris on early downs. Kind of what are you reading as you sift through the endless tweets on your morning shifts? And should we be flipping Damian Harris and Ramondre Stevenson in our pre-draft ranks? I have made that change to our official PPR rankings in the Roto-World Draft Guide.
It seems to be consensus almost at this point that Stevenson should be drafted ahead of Harris. And I think the reason is not because Damian Harris is going to be phased out completely of the offense. That's not the idea.
Or that he's bad. He's not bad.
No, he's not bad. The idea is that Ramondre Stevenson profiles, and Patrick Crane has talked a lot about this, as more of an every down back candidate than Harris. Now, whether that happens or not is anyone's guess. But at that point in the draft, you're shooting for upside. Like I feel like Harris is really boring pick in that part of the draft. I just don't get the appeal of Damian Harris in that part of the draft. I get the appeal of Stevenson. Also, Bill Belichick said on Tuesday morning that Harris and Stevenson were, I'm trying to paraphrase here, were we're going to take all three downs. In other words, we're not, when he's seemingly not going to use Ty Montgomery or whoever else as this sort of spoiler third down back, pass catching back, that would take a lot of appeal away from a guy like Stevenson. So that's a big development, if true.
A legit big, if true. The Ty Montgomery's not going to get 2.1% of the vote and just totally ruin the backfield for generations. Damian Harris is kind of – the thing is with Damian Harris is he's maxed out as a touchdown scorer. He's never going to have like another 15-touchdown season.
Probably not.
He's tapped out as a pass catcher. There's like no untapped upside there for Damian Harris as a pass catcher. Where there – Ramondre Stevenson, it didn't enter the league as like a pass catching zero – but it's kind of like an unknown, but he definitely flashed the pass catching upside. The Patriots are strongly telegraphing. They think there's room to grow for him as a pass catcher. I mean, Ramondre Stevenson, it was essentially like they played to a standstill down the stretch already last year. And it's weird because, yeah, Damian Harris is a good player. And like you said, he's not going to be like totally phased out. It just seems like Ramondre Stevenson is a slightly better player. He's more dynamic. He has more avenues to upside, especially in PPR leagues. And it just – it's going to be messy, and it could be like where the first two or three weeks, depending on like the game plans, the game script, it could look like Damian Harris is still just like the lead back. But I do really think the best bet from what we know on August 23rd is that Ramondre Stevenson's going to score more PPR fantasy points this season.
Yeah, I mean, I can see us, you know, really like grinding the backfield data for New England in week one and week two, like who's running the routes.
Being sad.
What'd you say?
Instead of being sad.
Well, maybe. And like who's getting the high value touches, meaning, you know, carries inside the 10 and then receptions out of the backfield. I wrote about Stevenson in very limited pass catching action last year, including the game that Damian Harris missed. He was quite the target commander. And
he's fairly dynamic, too.
I have a sense. I think there's reason to believe that, you know, he could become like a real part, consistent part of a Patriots offense that doesn't have a whole lot of target competition. I mean, you know, Kendrick Bourne apparently is canceled.
Well, it does have that's the thing. It has actually a lot of target competition, but it just doesn't have anyone guaranteed a certain target percentage.
Right. No dominant guy. Yeah.
I actually take at face value Bill Belichick's apparent quotes, which I actually haven't seen yet. It wasn't really on the site this morning. Is that bad?
Well, no, it was. It actually came out just as we started recording.
So, did you even blurb it, Denny? Did you not blurb it?
Well, I wasn't able to blurb it while talking.
You didn't blurb it, huh? All right.
I'm sure our news team is on it.
I actually take it at face value that he might be phasing out the James White role, where that might have been more of a Tom Brady creation that kind of hung around the past year or two. You know, not even really last year, since James White. Did he even play at all last year?
I think five
or six games, yeah. Or that role just might not make sense anymore if you don't have the ultimate, you know, like kind of like distributor quarterback and like Tom Brady, who's going to relentlessly target that position. It would make more sense to go with like a traditional two back allocation as opposed to three. And just the more dynamic, someone who's not a role player, basically also doubling as the pass catcher. Mm-hmm. I actually take Bill because it just makes too much sense. So I take Bill Belichick kind of at face value, which is also like very, very famous last words. But yeah, I think, you said it's almost consensus. I think we agree with the emerging consensus that Ramondre Stevenson should be going ahead of Damian Harris. Along the same lines as the Patriots, long foretold movement in the Commanders' backfield could be coming to fruition, where it seems the day two pick, Brian Robinson, might be carving out a red zone and goal line role. I mean, emphasis on seams. For all we know, they're trying to see like what he's made of. But it's been a weird summer for Antonio Gibson. You know, he's been getting some reps as a return man, which again could just be like, well, we'll just see if Antonio Gibson can do this in emergency. But the Antonio Gibson smoke signals remain quite troubling. Is there any way we can still treat Antonio Gibson as a running back too, Denny?
No, not a running back too. I mean, but you don't really have to draft him that way anymore because he's plunged down draft boards so dramatically over the past 2 weeks, you know, working with special teams and training camp. He was playing with second and third string players in the Washington offense against Kansas City this weekend, whereas Robinson seemed to be the RB1 in that game. I mean, there's just no two ways about it. Ben Standig of The Athletic did say, and we have a blurb on this on the site, if you ever get a chance to check our site, Gibson remains the best bet for backfield touches in Washington. That could be deceiving, because we could be talking about the kind of empty calorie touches that we don't really care about too much. You know, stuff between the 20s, whereas Robinson would seem like a bigger back, more straight ahead. The team loves his running style compared to Gibson's sort of dancing behind the line of scrimmage. Yeah, Robinson would seem to be the goal line, natural goal line back, and then J.D. McKissic is going to eat up all the targets and receptions. I do find myself somewhat interested, not so much in best ball, but in redraft. If Gibson gets to eighth, ninth round, I feel like it's a why not situation.
It kind of is, because I think both things are true. Like, the red flags are very, very, very concerning with Antonio Gibson, because he's kind of in the classic, he's like the lead back, but he's threatened in all the money situations where, like, we know he's not the pass catching back because they are obsessed with J.D. McKissic. We know that there was real draft capital invested in Brian Robinson, so you can't just treat that all as like coach speak or like summer experimenting. Like, there is a very real risk that Brian Robinson becomes like the early down hammer and the hammer near the goal line. But J.D. McKissic is still just J.D. McKissic. He's a very, very strict role player. Brian Robinson is a rookie for whom things could go haywire very quickly. Even at running back, it's quite often not smooth sailing for rookies. And like, Antonio Gibson could like reconsolidate like pretty heavy workloads pretty quickly, maybe even if he doesn't have them in the first few weeks. So he is someone where I feel like you can't go, like, if you're going into draft weekend this weekend, you can't emerge. I wouldn't be thrilled to emerge with Antonio Gibson as my second running back, but he is an intriguing like RB3 discount. Or if you're going zero RB and he's part of a mix, you know, maybe he could be your second running back. But it's very troubling for early in the season, but there are still some long-term potential with Antonio Gibson.
He profiles as, you know, if you're going zero RB or, you know, one of its cousins, hero RB or whatever.
And that's GYRORB, actually. It's really complicated.
God, I want a gyro so bad right now. I think that Gibson profiles as a nice, you know, mid-round pick for that sort of roster construction. Now, if you're using one or two or three of your top picks in your draft at running back, you have literally no reason to take Antonio Gibson. You can just take him off your draft board completely. So I think that he is sort of dependent on how you are constructing your team.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really, really, really good point. Yeah, like, if you still believe in robust RB, Antonio Gibson is probably going to be.
I mean, what use do you have? What scenario are you going to be like, oh yeah, Antonio Gibson, I'm starting him over Nick Chubb?
No, very, very good point. Denny, in New Orleans, Michael Thomas is now dealing with a new hamstring injury. The one-time heavyweight champion of the wide receiver world. I should have deleted that line.
We'll edit it out.
He's only played 345 snaps since his record-setting 2019, zero of which came in 2021. A total he would not have really added too much this summer either if we counted his summer snaps. Is this to the point where we, frankly, just need to be removing Michael Thomas from draft boards? I mean, that's not going to happen. He's not going to go undrafted. But just like, he's no longer looking like kind of like a life hack wide receiver three, is he?
No, there's so much volatility here. You know, he doesn't have Drew Brees, although Drew Brees had kind of disavowed him as a target hog in 2020. So
it was such a small sample size.
It was.
And it was in between injuries.
It wasn't looking good. I don't know. So you have Jameis Winston, and now you have actual target competition and Chris Olave and my guy Jarvis Landry, who seems like a really good late round pick. I'm just saying.
Off the chart dog levels before that was even a thing.
Yes. God, he's the original dog for the Zoomers, I guess. But and Michael Thomas, just, I don't think he can step back into that role where he's just getting 13, 14 targets a game where you can just pencil that in. You can't anymore. And, you know, the injury, this injury freaks me out. You know, I can't help it. I can't, after he's missed 2 years with an ankle injury and now he has a new hamstring injury. I cannot draft him anywhere near his ADP.
Yeah, I agree. And it's like, it's new everything, new quarterback, new coaching staff. I mean, a lot of holdovers still. So new coaching staff is a bit strong in my part. A lot of the same Sean Payton faces with a new play caller. totally new supporting cast.
Yes.
Someone who played like very hard and angry, like someone who just like played, attacked the game with like ferocity. A lot of times those guys age poorly, and we're seeing like through this like cascade of injuries he suffered. And like, we're not going to sit here and tell you there's like no upside in the Michael Thomas situation, but I agree. Like, there's no way he's coming back to 10 to 12 targets per game, Michael Thomas. No. That's just not happening.
No.
Like, unless for that to happen, it would have needed to be like a type of offseason where like he was healthy from day one.
Yeah.
Stayed healthy all spring and summer, like was back to peak physical condition, but that has not even come close to happening. And yeah, I think a good outcome for Michael Thomas at this point would be wide receiver 30 to 36. But that's kind of where he's being dragged. I think that's like his max outcome. And there's just too many red flags. And his ADP might fall, because I mean, people are reading the same things we are. They're hearing things like this podcast. I might still be comfortable with him in like the wide receiver, like 34 to 40 range. Like if I'm out of ideas or something, because there's plausible upside, but that old role is just totally gone. Well, I maybe in a very best case scenario, he's a wide receiver too. But I think wide receiver 3 is where he's going to be. And there's a lot of guys in that ADP range with more upside at this point.
Yeah. So you have Thomas, according to Fantasy Pros, he's going as wide receiver 31 with the 75th pick overall, like right around like Hunter Renfro.
I'd take him over Renfro, I'll be honest.
I don't know. I will say,
fantasy hipsters got it wrong on Hunter Renfro. I'll say
that. I will say he's going right next to Gabe Davis. That's not close for me.
It's not happening.
Although I guess there are people on Twitter who would take Thomas over Davis for some reason, because Davis scores too many touchdowns. And you have Allen Robinson in that crowd, Juju. I mean, I would
take A-Rob or Juju, where I feel like there's more like unexplored upside with both those guys.
Have, by the way, Chris Olave going as wide receiver 45 at 112 overall alongside Treylon Burks. So I think Olave for the price point is a way better pick.
Yeah, I actually agree with that. And it's tough because there's like two known target like commanders in the Seahawks receiver core. So I think it's hard for people like take Chris Olave seriously, but man, real life draft capital is like maybe the most important indicator there is. And someone who fits pretty well with Jameis Winston's like supposed skill set, Chris Olave. And Chris Olave could be like a screaming bargain as the wide receiver 45.
I mean, there are plenty of paths for Chris Olave by early in the season for us to come on here and say, you know, he is the wide receiver 1 in New Orleans. Like, no, period.
It's very, very plausible.
Yeah.
Man, what a strange receiver core, by the way, because there's like a lot of like unsung 2021 heroes in there, like Deontay Hardy, Marcus Callaway, Tre'Quan Smith, I think is still on the team. Someone's going to get cut from that group, actually. You're not going to carry 6 of those guys, I don't think.
No.
Maybe someone get traded for a day 3 pick, but really, really intriguing receiver core. We'll be back with a really, really intriguing middle third of the show. Prep for your draft with the latest player rankings, projections, and more in the NBC Sports Edge Fantasy Football Draft Guide. It's powered by RotoWorld, the premier source for player news and fantasy information. Take advantage of our preseason special and get the draft guide for $5 when you use promo code DRAFTGUIDE at checkout on NBCSportsEdge.com/draftguide. That is $5 for our draft guide with promo code DRAFTGUIDE at NBCSports.com/draftguide.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Denny, as Michael Thomas descends, Christian Kirk ascends. Mm-hmm. And Jack, at least according to you, this is what you wanted to talk about. So we're talking about, no, it's fine. It's worth talking about because no one wants to talk about Christian Kirk because I think everyone is just spooked by his admittedly absurd contract. And like people are kind of like conflating that with like what his production is going to be. Yes, he's like wildly, wildly overpaid, but the Jags seem determined for his usage to match his contract. And do you just think, yeah, there's a chance Christian Kirk is being undervalued in fantasy drafts because of skepticism about his deal, which again, he's not going to live up to this contract, but he's mm-hmm. paid to play what could be a very, very lucrative fantasy role.
So he's another guy who I think makes sense if you're going with running backs early in your draft. I don't know if he makes sense if you're constructing a roster with a bunch of receivers up top. Now, he's going at wide receiver 41. Matthew Berry today on the Fantasy Football Happy Hour on Peacock. Very good show. Mentioned Christian Kirk as a value play after he saw, Christian Kirk saw 36% target share on his 22 pass routes this past week against Pittsburgh. Okay. Like he drew as many targets as the rest of the offense from Trevor Lawrence. And this actually fits nicely with what we've heard from Jaguars beat writers all summer, which is that Christian Kirk has been both the primary intermediate target for Lawrence and downfield. I do think that Kirk could be like something of a skeleton key for people who are determined, you know, to go running back heavy early in drafts.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned Kirk getting play both underneath and deep. Where like that's kind of like a positive of his game, but it was sometimes like a negative in Arizona, I felt like, where the Cardinals like were never fully sure how to deploy him.
Yeah.
And he was almost kind of like an in-betweener. You know, like sometimes on defense, like they can't figure out if a guy is like a linebacker or a safety. And I almost felt like that way about Christian Kirk sometimes. Like the Cardinals just could not settle on like his best position, his best deployment. But he was always still reasonably productive, always hanging around that wide receiver 36 range. And yeah, he never got a chance to be like the true alpha with the Cardinals. And like there's a reason why that target percentage was so high over the weekend and why they're paying him, why they had to overpay him. It's because they have no other targets. I mean,
right.
It's Zay Jones. I mean, Zay Jones is getting drafted. That's how bad the Jaguars target situation is, that people can plausibly be like, man, Zay Jones is going to get targets. Like, this is kind of nuts. I mean, Marvin Jones is still around. Evan Ingram could be a post-type sleeper. But we're talking about like in New England, like where it's like a deep sprawling receiver core where someone needs to emerge. Like this is like a very thin receiver core where they like have to force the – so the Patriots don't have to force the issue with anyone. The Jaguars like have to force the issue with Christian Kirk. And yeah, it stands to reason that they are going to do that. And I think he's going to be one – no one's like going to be happy about having Christian Kirk as their wide receiver three, but – he really should finish in like that wide receiver 28 to 36 range, I'd say.
I think that's like the median outcome for him. I think that there are plenty of paths for him to be, you know, a wide low end wide receiver two in fantasy this year. And if you buy into Trevor Lawrence's maturation and evolution as a pro quarterback after last year's disaster with Urban Meyer, then and all indications are that he is doing stuff that he simply was not doing last preseason, then somebody's going to benefit, and it would seem to be Christian Kirk. So I really think if you're like looking for a wide receiver two or three after, you know, maybe going heavy like tight end and running back early on, I think Kirk is like kind of a cheat code for you.
And I just think Kirk will, like, so quote unquote, always be available.
Because he's just going to be someone that, like, anytime people are on the clock, he's like one of those guys you make a case against in your head. Like, I'm not. I'm
yeah,
like,
sure.
It's fine. Like, I know he's fine, but I'm not doing this. Like, I need some upside. And I think he will, like, fall. Kind of, he'll fall in sharp drafts. He'll fall in home leagues. Like, just people aren't concocting cases in their head to take Christian Kirk.
You're right about that. I mean, Christian Kirk could go undrafted in some home leagues.
No, I don't know about that.
Well, he's going at 101 overall, like near, well, I guess like Olave, Alan Lazard.
So. Pre-ranks have gotten a little too good. Like that might have happened 10 years ago, but pre-ranks have gotten a little too good for that.
Oh, well.
But people will be. Christian Kirk will be available. Yeah. You're not going to, like, if you're like going into a draft, like secretly targeting Christian Kirk, he's probably always going to be available like one round later than you were expecting. So Denny says to draft, he calls Christian Kirk a must draft.
Yeah.
So,
in the first round.
Yeah, do with that what you will. And the Packers receiver core, we aren't really sure who to hype. So we're hyping Christian Kirk apparently. Yeah. But in the Packers, it's veterans, Alan Lazard, Randall Cobb, and Sammy Watkins seemingly in the lead to be the top three, but however, no less a man than the starting quarterback himself, back-to-back MVP Aaron Rodgers, has said fourth rounder Romeo Doubs will not be held to, quote, the standard for a normal rookie we've had here in the past. Because the Packers are kind of like the Patriots, where they're infamous for, if you're a rookie receiver, you're just not going to produce with them. Like,
you're not going to play.
Yeah, you're barely even going to play. We saw with Amari Rodgers last year, it just takes so long to get up to speed, but kind of like the Patriots, the Packers realize they're in like a bit of a desperate situation. They can't afford to be so precious. And Romeo Doubs is forcing the issue by lighting up training camp with big plays. Apparently also committing a lot of drops
and bad routes too.
Apparently. Bad routes. But Christian Watson has only now resumed practicing. Just who in the world are we prioritizing in this Packers receiver core? And is like Romeo Doubs kind of like a classic, like bad hype guy pick, or is there genuine upside there?
I'm torn on this because of Rodgers' history. You know, almost any other quarterback, I would.
Aaron Rodgers is a changed man.
I would
He's doing like spiritual quests.
Well, maybe now. Maybe in his spiritual quest, he realized that rookies can contribute, and we have to look into the side effects of the substance, whatever it was called that he used, and see if that's one of them. But yeah, I mean, Doubs is going to see playing time. I have trouble seeing. You know, Sammy Watkins, who I know we're not supposed to talk about injury prone players, but for the love of God, Watkins is constantly hurt. I believe he's hurt right now. At least dinged up, you know, so him, Randall Cobb is 100 years old / 35. And
he's still like 32.
32. Yeah, right. He's been in the league for 18 years. I just don't see a scenario where Doubs can't get on the field. I think that he will get on the field, and you know, and from there, if he makes a big play or two or three, I think you know he could establish himself. You know, I don't want to say as the wide receiver one in Green Bay, but maybe Alan Lazard has shown nothing to indicate that he can be an unquestioned alpha receiver in any offense.
So say you're on the clock in your home league. So it's not somewhere where I believe the word is steamed. It's not somewhere where Alan Lazard is getting steamed into the top 36. You're between the wide receiver 40 and 50 range. Would you rather take Alan Lazard or would you rather take Romeo Doubs? Denny, like Alan Lazard, who does have a baseline.
Yeah,
I very much agree. Alan Lazard still has zero ceiling, but he does have a by far the highest baseline. Do you take Alan Lazard's baseline or do you take Romeo Doubs' ceiling?
I'm going to be super boring, which I usually go for whatever pick is less boring, but I'll go boring and say Lazard. I told our resident Zoomer Kyle the other day, like if Rodgers says Alan Lazard is wide receiver one, Alan Lazard is wide receiver one. It can be that simple.
I believe Alan Lazard's career high for receiving yards is 513. He's had trouble staying healthy. If he stays healthy, I feel like 800 yards is probably reasonable for Alan Lazard. And I do feel like you probably have to bank that over whatever Romeo Doubs' like ceiling is.
Yeah, I do think Doubs is one injury away from possibly asserting himself as the number one target in that offense. I think he's
going to be doomed to be a spiked weak guy like all year.
Maybe.
Where he could be, sometimes those guys are really valuable. So like Marquez Valdez-Scantling, I always liked Marquez Valdez-Scantling as like a wide receiver four because he had a 0 point floor, but there aren't many wide receiver fours who can win a week with like one or two catches. And maybe Romeo Doubs is in that same boat where he could go catchless. But if he catches two balls, there's a high chance it's for 74 yards and a touchdown.
Right. So. I get that. I will say one guy who gets lost in all this Green Bay receiver talk is Robert Tonyan, who apparently is on
back finally. But yeah, he's like barely practiced this summer.
Yeah. And so I guess we have to keep tabs on him. But I'm really interested in Tonyan. If you are completely punting the tight end position this season, and you know that's you know, if you don't get one of the elite guys, that's a viable strategy. Then Tonyan really interests me.
I'm interested in Tonyan too, because he essentially doesn't have an ADP, and it's just a skill core without defined roles right now. And the closest thing we've seen to a defined role is that 2 years ago, Robert Tonyan was a preferred target in the red zone.
Yeah.
Like, so we can say that Robert Tonyan and Aaron Rodgers have a history in the red zone, where the rest of these guys, there's like no real history. Like even with Alan Lazard, there's not like Aaron Rodgers always looks Alan Lazard's way in this situation. We're like, the one thing where I feel like we have kind of a blueprint is Aaron Rodgers targeting Robert Tonyan in the red zone. And again, he's essentially free. You might not even have to draft him.
Yeah.
You can maybe like just monitor him on the waiver wire as we get closer to week one. And I am quite interested in Robert Tonyan myself, despite kind of a concerning injury. He's off the PUP list.
Yeah.
So meaning they expect him back within the first four games, but I wouldn't be like surprised if he wasn't ready for week one.
Beat writers have pointed out that, you know, if and when he's ready to go and run a full complement of routes, that's what he will be doing, because there is no competition for that primary tight end pass catching role. Josiah DeGuara is playing fullback, apparently.
H-back. They used a day two pick on an H-back, didn't he?
Which that is the process. But and then Mercedes Lewis, who is probably older than me, is the other tight end. So I do think Tonyan, if he's okay from that knee injury, has like a very clear path to a lot of routes in an offense that doesn't have a dominant pass catcher like Davante Adams anymore.
Yeah, don't sleep on Julius Thomas in Green Bay either. He's on this team. No, he's not.
No, I was going to say, when did this happen?
I was going to make a Richard Rodgers joke, who used to be on the Packers, of course, and I decided to upgrade it to a Julius Thomas joke.
Julius Thomas.
There probably are some Easter eggs in that Packers skills core, I bet, but not Julius Thomas level. Denny, our friend, our old friend, Hayden Winks, tried to get himself canceled over the weekend by tweeting concern over Travis Kelce's preseason snap rate. He even went as far as to admit defeat and tweeted a gif of himself turning into a corn cob. So Hayden has admitted defeat, but do you actually think the lad may have been onto something? What do you think Mr. Winks was onto, Denny?
Unlike you, I will not abridge Hayden Winks' First Amendment right, okay? His right to free speech should be protected like yours and mine. Everybody should be able to be heard on our podcast, and that's what I'll do here. All right, so he did tweet some concern, and at first I was among the people poking fun at Hayden.
You tried to get his account suspended.
Relax, man. And then he wrote this. I don't think he admitted defeat, because here's what Hayden Winks wrote. He said, let me elaborate. Kelce is 33 years old, and the history of elite tight ends falling off at this age is strong. Over the last 4 years, Kelce's snap rate has gradually fallen from 95% to 92% to 86% to 82% in 2021. And Kelce's yards per game last year was the lowest it's been since Patrick Mahomes showed up. That's the same with his yards per route run. Would it be a surprise if the Chiefs began saving him for the postseason? I don't think so. So it goes on to say basically that his preseason usage is a lot different than it has been during the Mahomes era in Kansas City. I think that's a good point. I also think that fantasy managers, maybe including myself, are underplaying how different this KC offense is going to look this year. Pat, they're using a fullback regularly in the preseason. This is something that we did not see during the Tyreek Hill era. And they're using more two tight end sets. I think that we're going to see less of the fancy pants football that we're used to seeing from Andy Reid, and more kind of standard stuff. And Kelce's age cannot be ignored. So here's the thing Hayden was pointing out. And Hayden, I'm defending your right to free speech here as the best I can. He's pointing out that Kelce is a tough sell in the first round, considering these factors. And I agree with that.
Yeah, I would never take Travis Kelce in the first round this year. I will totally agree with that. And I've been on the Kelce is like subtly aging train for a while. I mean, not even that subtly. Last year, the yards per outrun was something that really popped.
Yeah.
It was a new career low by a fairly wide margin. But on this, by the same token, you mentioned the offense is changing. I mean, it's changed to where now the one guy that Patrick Mahomes has established regular season chemistry with is Travis Kelce. I don't think they can like save him for the postseason, because as we know, this is the most brutal division in football. I don't think they're gonna be able to like manage his reps. And even as the snaps decline, I think it's probably going to be one of those situations like where Jason Witten's snaps decline, Tony Gonzalez's snaps decline, but their targets just never really declined. And even if their explosiveness declines, they're like such a safe receptacle for short target. Like they just move the chains, like basically I will. But I really don't. Even if the usage kind of dramatically changes, I just don't think the output, maybe like other than like the raw yardage and touchdown totals, I think the reception and target totals remain pretty strong. But yeah, I do agree. The upside is not there anymore to be a first round. He's not tiered above anymore. Like alone, he's not like one of those like prime Gronk, even maybe Jimmy Graham, where like he's a tier alone himself atop, and there's like a huge positional advantage to taking him in the first round.
I would much rather have Kyle Pitts in the third round than I would Travis Kelce in the first. I would even rather have Mark Andrews, who I've expressed concern about the Ravens offense and Andrews this year.
Since you're taking Isaiah Likely in the second round, you left that part out.
That's right. I would take him first overall over CMC and Jonathan Taylor. I love my bad players, but so I would take either Andrews or Pitts, considering their ADP, over Kelce without blinking. Like I think that Kelce is being drafted probably above his floor. Hayden points out in his post, in his call it an apology post, whatever it was, explanation post. And he says that if Kelce's snap share drops from 82% to 75% or whatever this year, he cannot bring back that first round value.
I don't think he can bring back the first round value. I think even if a snap percentage declines 7%, though, he could get the same amount of targets. I think it's like there's just certain players where even as like the reps, like the minutes in basketball are scaled back, or the innings in baseball are scaled, but they always get like the important ones though. And I do think the targets will remain fairly steady. But you mentioned Kyle Pitts. I just get more confused every day with Kyle Pitts, because he's truly like a freak, once in a generation talent. But Marcus Mariota's like defining characteristic as a passer was not attempting difficult throws in Tennessee. That was also kind of Desmond Ridder at Cincinnati, a very, very safe player. He's going to be so blanketed all year. I just don't know what to think with this young man.
You didn't see the highlight from the.
Oh, I did. Yeah. I did.
I mean, what in the world was that?
It was pretty sick.
No tight end has ever moved like that, ever. Not even close.
No, actually, yeah, not maybe Tony Gonzalez, like way back in the day. Way back in the day.
Tony Gonzalez, all due respect, is a plumber compared to Kyle.
No, this is all right. That's a good time for to take a break. We'll be right back after this. This week is the debut of Matthew Berry's new show, Fantasy Football Happy Hour with Matthew Berry. The legendary fantasy football analyst is back with NBC and RotoWorld, doing what he does best, discussing sleepers to draft, rolling out his love-hate list, breaking down who to start and sit, and much, much more. There'll also be plenty of actionable information along the way for you sports bettors as well. Check it out weekdays in the afternoon on Peacock, or listen to the show in podcast form wherever you download and subscribe. Denny was watching it today.
And I was.
Picking up facts about Christian Kirk.
I was grinding blurbs, watching Matthew Berry on the show. It's great.
You should subscribe to Peacock, by the way. Peacock is actually a very, very good service. I was very upset when I could not. This is actually not a joke. I wanted to watch the White Sox and Guardians game on Sunday.
Yeah.
But then the game got postponed because there was a field drainage issue. So a big blow to Peacock, a big blow to my fantasy team. I'm going to be frank about that. Premier League's back. Peacock is where the Premier League lives, Denny.
Oh, you know, in your fantasy, you only have 14 more weeks to get through.
It's true. The baseball season, I can't believe – we're almost to the quarter pole. We've got 3/4 of the baseball season to go. It's heating up. Things are really, really heating up on the diamond, Denny.
back to the backfields. Damian Pierce sat out the Texans' second preseason game. A strong indication, maybe he hasn't necessarily earned the starting job, but he's convinced them that he needs an important role in the backfield. Do we see RB2 potential here with Damian Pierce? Someone we've talked about basically since the draft. Like, this isn't new. It is new that maybe they're already regarding him as the RB1, but someone who's been on our radar since the draft. Do we see RB2 potential here? He's currently the RB44 on Yahoo. That will go up.
It's the
RB30 on Underdog. Do we see RB2 potential here, or is this like a strict flex situation?
I think we have RB2 potential because of how the Texans are treating the backfield situation at the moment. I mean, Lovie Smith was very open. And thank you, Lovie, if you're listening. I know you are, for being, you know, honest about why, you know, Damian Pierce did not play in the second Houston preseason game. Lovie Smith wanted a closer look at Marlon Mack and I guess Rex Burkhead, but I'm thinking more it was Mack.
Knows what they have in Rex Burkhead. I mean, this is an unknown commodity at the NFL level, Rex Burkhead.
Yeah, it's a culture fit, apparently. They love them some Rex Burkhead. So I think that, you know, speaks volumes. And then we have a report from the Houston Chronicle's Jonathan M. Alexander on Tuesday morning, who said he believes Damian Pierce is, quote, looking more like he could be the lead back. He later adds, I'm not mad about it, which is it's good. Thank you for that one. I do think Pierce was so impressive in the Texans' first preseason game, averaging nearly 10 yards a carry on, you know, obviously limited carries. They're not going to give him 30 carries in a preseason game. I think he was so impressive that he does, you know, he is in the lead, you know, to be an RB1. Now, can the Texans generate the sort of neutral and positive game script for an early down back to be super valuable? Probably not. But again, I know that I keep saying this caveat, but like if you're a zero RB person, you are hammering Damian Pierce. You're reaching for, you're making sure you get him. Whereas if you're set at running back, I just don't see much appeal for a guy like Pierce, who could easily, you know, fall out of favor. He's a rookie. You know, a rookie fumbles once and it's over, you know, I mean, whatever. And then Rex Burkhead will be there for the, to pick away the pass catching opportunity.
So yeah, the Pierce hype is, it's not just coming from one reporter. We've had three different reporters that we've sourced talking up Damian Pierce. Like you said, the coaching staff has talked him up. It was a situation where even in a backfield this bad, like they weren't ever going to send a gift to roll. He was going to have to come out and earn it. And there's just been every indication from camp that he has come out and earned it. And the red flags are still, of course, many. Like you said, he's one mistake away from getting mothballed. Game script is going to remain bad. But, yeah, so I mean, RB44 on Yahoo, as long as that doesn't rise above, like, RB 35, 36, which it could, I guess, he looks like he'll be a pretty, like, solid RB3 or 4. Yeah, you should not treat him as an RB2, though.
I mean, ideally, no, but you know, he's going to be my RB2 in a few.
So you go full zero RB and you need him to be your RB2, at least to begin the season. You could probably count on 12 to 15 carries.
You could do worse is what
you could do worse, which is zero RB : you could do worse.
That is our saying.
That's the name of the game.
It really sells. It's good PR.
It is very, very good PR. Denny, Ken Walker, who does not want to go by Kenneth, apparently, in Seattle, has no timetable for a return as he recovers from hernia surgery. Just basically, how high is too high for Rashad Penny? He was the best running back in the NFL down the stretch last year. He said, like, one of the reasons he never got going is because he's a rhythm runner. You could debate whether that actually exists, but he said he's the kind of guy who he just needs, like, 15 to 20 touches to really get in the flow of the game. And I think that makes sense because he's a home run hitter. And when you're a home run hitter, you need as many – if you get 15 to 20 opportunities, usually you're going to bust like a 20 or 30-yard run at least once. That's just kind of the running back he is. Do we think he could basically run away with this role while Kenneth Walker misses perhaps the first three or four games of the season?
No. I want to say yes because I do have him on a fair number of my teams. But I don't think Ken Walker is just going to be holding the proverbial clipboard, although running backs obviously are not holding clipboards. So that's bad.
No, they're not even allowed near the clipboard.
We'll edit that out. So I think that he will work himself into a rotation of sorts. What interests me as a sicko who loves bad players is, Rashad Penny's injury history, Ken Walker being out for the early part of the season. Travis Homer is the RB3 in Seattle. And let me tell
you, you gotta stop with this.
Folks, he ran as the unquestioned starter in Seattle's Week 2 preseason game. I forget who they were playing. Chicago. It was the worst game, literally the worst game ever. Let's monitor Travis Homer. Remember I said that.
So I gave you the floor and you took it to tout Travis Homer.
That's what you pay me for.
It actually is what we pay you for. That's actually really good. Real quick, let's see what Penny, and this probably will not be totally reflected yet.
No, I don't think it is, because it says wide receiver, I'm sorry, running back 33. That can't be right.
He's up to RB 30, it appears, an underdog. So, I mean,
okay.
I don't know. He's an interesting guy. I mean, he was literally, it was a very, very soft schedule, but he was literally the best running back in the NFL the final 6 weeks.
He was, season. By every measure. I want to ask you real quick, would you take Penny over Clyde Edwards-Helaire?
Yeah, I would, just because, I mean, it's a more run committed team. I just I have a better understanding of what kind of running back Rashad Penny is. Like, I still don't even understand what CEH's role is supposed to be. I'm not being serious. He's just hasn't been a good enough pass catcher, CEH. Like, where I still just don't even know. I don't even know what good CEH looks like, really. It's kind of the problem. I mean, I guess good CEH looks like he starts making a difference as a pass catcher this year. He steals some goal line carries. Where the Rashad Penny, I at least know he's a breakaway runner. He's a big play guy. He can be a touchdown scorer. I know what kind of back and it's just a more run committed team in the Seahawks than the Chiefs.
I think I know the answer to this question, but Penny or Chase Edmonds?
Oh my gosh. Penny, I'm just kind of out on Chase Edmonds, because I just feel like that's going to be a totally balkanized backfield, basically, where very strict roles. And his role, I just see no way that Chase Edmonds' role is going to be the goal line guy. Mm-hmm. Maybe he could finally catch enough passes, because Raheem Mostert, it's going to be strict change of pace back. Sonny Michel is not a Chase Edmonds needs to catch 60 balls this year, though, I think, to really get kind of serious in fantasy.
I am kind of excited about a Miami offense that has gone all in on speed. I think that it'll at worst, it'll be a great experiment to see how far that can take you with Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle. Chase Edmonds is extraordinarily fast. Raheem Mostert, without all the injuries, is actually really fast. One of the fastest, if not the fastest running back in the whole league. So I'm really interested to see this, how this works. And I think Edmonds can, see enough targets. I'm sorry to, get on a tangent here, but I think he can see enough targets where he could be viable in PPR as a running back too.
That is what it comes down to for Chase Edmonds. He needs to see enough targets, and it's an offense full of target hogs, though. Where Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle are there's just no questions about are going to be target hogs. Mike Gesicki is claiming he's going to be a blocker, but Mike Gesicki's only on the field to catch passes.
I'm out. I have no interest in
him. It's not like Mike Gesicki, if you read his comments over the weekend, was very politely being don't draft me.
He's
literally said, saying he's playing a new position. Yeah. And he's welcoming extra preseason reps. Yeah. He said he needs to learn his new position. So yeah, Chase Edmonds, I feel he needs to catch. What's an acceptable amount of Chase Edmonds receptions for you? I honestly think it needs to be 60, which is really, really, really high. But I think he needs to be a 60 reception running back for him to really return value.
Yeah, probably.
It's a legit flex.
Probably. I was going to say 50, but
he caught 53 balls 2 years ago. So it can be I don't think 60 is a huge, huge leap.
But I actually think I think the target distribution could be fairly narrow.
It's true. It actually is true.
Yeah. And I'm not counting Gesicki. I'm saying 50% for Waddle and Hill in some capacity. And then maybe a chunk for Edmonds. And then the rest is kind of sprinkled around. I could see the Dolphins taking that tact.
Yeah, so Chase, I don't have like any Chase Edmonds. That actually could be a mistake.
Yeah, no, I have FOMO about Chase Edmonds. I don't have enough.
Should we end the show? I was going to do a few running back rapid fire. I don't really know why though.
let's do a couple rapid fire. I'm ready.
Would you draft DeAndre Swift or would you draft Joe Mixon, Denny, when you're on the clock?
Mixon.
You would draft really? You would draft Mixon.
I get that Swift like jumps off the page in every capacity, but Jamal Williams is still there. Like he's still going to see a lot of early down work. I guess Swift could just dominate with receptions.
I think he's going to.
He's
on like an Austin Eckler trajectory. I'm kind of all in on Swift this year, I'll be honest.
Yeah, I do. I know I'm on an island there. I know.
Jamal Williams looked done last year. I mean, I know they have some guys who actually had like a little life, like Craig Reynolds, but I think basically if DeAndre Swift stays healthy, which is what we used to say about Austin Eckler, he's on like the Austin Eckler trajectory. I'm going Eckler over Mixon.
All right.
Should I take Saquon Barkley or Javonte Williams?
Oh, God, that is tough. And that's one I've had to struggle with in best ball leagues where
because it just feels like a typical conundrum this summer. That's kind of why I wanted to ask it.
Barkley, just because the path is so clear for Barkley to get tons of touches, but Javonte has that insane ceiling. Ugh.
Yeah, I take Barkley as well, though. Whereas Javonte, I just think the Melgo is still like in for like 35% of the touches at least. And
yeah, I do think the fact that the Broncos waited till just before the draft to bring.
I know we've talked back. About we've kind of legislated this in the past though. Like they still brought him back though. Like it doesn't really. They kind of just knew. I think they just knew they could wait him out.
From a zero RB standpoint, or I guess hero RB standpoint. At the end of the season, the ideal lineup could look like Javonte Williams, a bunch of good receivers, and then somebody who you can just sub in at RB2. Like that could work.
The final one I'm going to ask. So we've kind of been talking about this, like hitting on like 16 with last year's kind of like mid round, basically treating like last year's ADP overachievers as RB1s, Leonard Fournette or James Conner, Denny. Who would you rather have?
Both of those are ugly, man. I've been fading both of them.
Me too. I quite literally have not drafted either player all summer.
I have very little interest in James Conner at that ADP. And I know that I touted James Conner last summer because he was going, really late compared to Chase Edmonds. But that ADP is kind of gross to me. And yeah, I think that there are reasons to be a little bit worried about Fournette. I know you've expressed some of those reasons.
I'm like way too much on the record. I just think Leonard Fournette has been on borrowed time for a while.
Yes, yes. And I know we're not drafting Leonard Fournette because he's like generational and he can do it all himself. Obviously, the complete opposite is probably true. This offensive line apocalypse for Tampa.
Is
a problem for everybody. I'm completely freaked out to have exposure to pretty much anybody in this offense because it has been predicated on having the best pass blocking offensive line in the entire league for the past two seasons. No more injuries, retirements, everything. They're going to struggle in that way, and I can't help but think that Fournette, would be. Would be hurt by that.
I think it's worse news for Fournette than Brady still, because Brady's like signature skill is just getting rid of the ball.
Yeah,
like,
he's inevitable. What are you going to do?
He is inevitable. But you're talking about retirements. He's also going to retire for a second time before week one. Tom Brady, right?
he was vacationing. Apparently, he was not on The Masked Singer.
So what was he actually? Did we actually find out? I haven't been online this morning. Did we find out finally?
Aaron Wilson from Pro Football Network reported that he was in the Bahamas at an exclusive resort with his family. I guess that was one they could not cancel.
Well, I think what honestly probably happened there, he retired. The family like actually did want him to retire. He did it. It's like, because it must be a really good time of year to go to the Bahamas. I mean, they would know. And he basically comes back to the Bucks like, I really want to play, but they're like dead set. Like, it's just so beautiful that time of year.
Yeah, right.
Like they're dead set on going. Can I please just play and take 12 days off in the middle of the day. Yeah, whatever. Like, it doesn't matter.
I mean, I could see him bringing his waterproof iPad and or Microsoft
Surface, goes without whatever saying. It is.
And just grinding film the entire time.
Not a single drop of alcohol had hit his lips the entire time.
Oh, no. No. He didn't drink non-alcoholic. It was water the whole time.
That's true. And not even like normal water, because that doesn't, there's not enough electrolytes in that.
Yeah, right. It was the bubble water hawked by Russell Wilson.
The brain water.
Yeah.
The brain water. Brain water is what we drink before we do the show. That's why it's so good. That is all the time we have for today. Keep it locked to NBC Sports Edge and Roto World. Keep it locked to this podcast. Keep it locked to Matthew Berry on Peacock, the show getting off the ground this week. Noon Eastern, correct, Denny?
Right? That's right.
Noon Eastern. You should see us on there at some point. Keep it locked to that. Keep it locked to everything. We're heading into the heart of draft season. We're going to do the best we can to keep you informed. For Denny Carter, I am Patrick Daugherty. We'll catch you later in the week.